accession number 18488, Reel 4.
Fighting, you know, in Warsaw, on the German side, like. And when we were in Ozaru, that place, we stay overnight. And in the morning, he talked to us through the speaker. And he said that he will always remember as a greatest battle at Leningrad or Stalingrad, like you call it, and Warsaw Uprising. It was the most heroic. He admitted that himself. Yeah.
This is real Daniel Hausman, Reel 4. I changed the tape, Daniel. Yes. Yes, that must have been a very emotional time for you all.
It was.
You know, leaving.
That's why I can't, you know, talk about it.
Yes.
Calmly.
Oh, I can understand that. Mm-hmm. I can understand it so much. Yes. You were saying about the Ukrainians when they went in. Did they behave differently from the Germans?
Much worse. Much worse. They did. I think at that time I would prefer to be in German hand than Ukraine. Yes, yeah. Very bad day. And then again, people don't know about it. Normally, you know, not generally. No. Take a very sadistic way. Yeah.
So, when you were taken off, were you given food and drink? You know, did you have to walk out and
yes.
To the trains?
No, not a chance. Not a chance. No, nothing. Nothing. No, not even water. So they put us in the trains, cattle trains, you know. And I don't know exactly how many of us were in that compartment, you know. But when you put your foot on the floor, you could hardly move. It was so many of us. Not sanitary, you know, not toilets, nothing. So I remember two of us, we have very tiny knives, little knives. And we try to make a hole in the floor, in the train, to just help ourselves with the only tea, but because, you know, otherwise. And then we were traveling 4 days, and once only they opened the train and let us go out somewhere in the, you know, between the fields. So could you imagine when we managed to get out of the train, the first thing everyone just, you know, did what we have to do. Never mind that Germans were around. We didn't bother about that, just to have release, really. So, yeah. And after 4 days, they took us to the Stalag Falding World, Falding Buster, first one.
What was that like?
Well, one thing, we had the water, we could wash ourselves. So actually, the very first thing when we could walk into the barrack and somebody noticed taps, you know, and water was on. So everyone took off everything and we just stand there naked and cold water, but never mind. And we wash ourselves. That was the very first thing. And the windows were open, you know, white. Germans outside, but it didn't bother us. We just want to wash ourselves, yeah.
Were you given food there as well? Food and drink?
Well, I think next day, breakfast. Breakfast, so that was some sort of herbs. And actually, I find out after years and years here in Nottingham in hospital, I had the operation and talking, you know, doctor gave me so many questions about, you know, women. Yes, and how often we have our what menstruation and so on. So I have a normal, I have normal all the time, apart from the time I was in the stalag. And so he started to give me a question, and I told him that none of us have, during all the time we were there, because of the herbs they gave us. And he tried to find out, you know, the doctor here asked me what sort of herbs, but we wasn't able to tell what sort of herbs, some sort of mixture, you know. They didn't give us tea or coffee, just twice a day, in the morning and at night, herbs. And mind you, in the way it was really a blessing that we were without any, you know, complication, because, you know, none of us have any sanitary towels or anything really, so I don't know what it would be like if... So that was really good, but the doctor said that was the probably, you know, first thing when they tried to make the pills. So herbs was the first sort of, yeah. We didn't know at that time about it, obviously, but, yeah.
Where did you sleep in? How long were you in that stalag?
All together, because I was in a few different ones, but all together it was from the 4th of October to end of April next year, a few months.
Were they all much the same, the camps that you went to? The different
no,
stalags?
The last one was worse.
And which one was that?
Oberlangen. Because, as we find out, not very long ago, actually last year I find out about it from the friends, you know, in Poland. Because we didn't have any, you know, compensation from Germans, like people from concentration camp, they have, but we don't. So, you know, ladies in Poland, they try to find out and they send a letter to Red Cross Geneva, you know, and try to find out. And apparently the Red Cross from Geneva, International Red Cross, they said that we should have, because the Oberlangen, the last one, was second-class concentration camp, like German call. They even put in the paper, in the newspaper, you know, that Oberlangen was a second class of concentration camp. And somebody read that, and that's why they decided to send that news to the International Red Cross. And they said that Germans should pay. So the people in Poland, my friends, ladies, they've got some, you know. But we, say like me and the other who live here in this country, we won't get anything.
And what was it like in that camp? The conditions?
Very cold, dirty, you know, and really.
How did you live? Where were you staying? You know, were you put in barracks?
Barracks. Actually, I've got photographs from that place. We'll show you later. Yeah. And then we've been liberated by Polish division from the, you know, they used to be here on the west all the time, and General Maczek division. That was a day, really. We knew that the war is nearly finished, because some of us work in the hospital and the other in the kitchen, you know, the stalag kitchen. So they managed to hear, you know, talking between Germans and sometimes even radio. And so we knew that it is nearly the end of the war. We've been waiting for that moment. And then suddenly we could hear the sound of heavy artillery, you know. So we knew that, you know, they are coming our way. And then people, German people who live, you know, farmers, they used to leave their houses and just march, you know. So from the camp we could see the silhouettes, you know, walking, and we realized that it is nearly the end. And one day, suddenly we could hear some sort of, you know, shouting outside the camp. And then through the speaker, a German voice, that nobody can leave the barracks. Everybody has to be inside. If they notice anybody outside, they will shut. So keep the windows and doors closed. All right, so we stay inside. And then suddenly we could hear some sort of noise. Difficult to recognize what sort of noise it was. And then quiet. So one girl, she tried to open door, but just you know, just little bit to look at what's happened outside. And she noticed a man on the motorbike. And she shouted inside, "It's a man on the motorbike, and the gate is sort of, you know, damaged, is open." So then we didn't bother, you know, what German told us, to keep the door close. We opened windows and everybody just, you know, ran outside. And we still didn't know what nationality that man is. We knew it isn't German because have had different uniform. And we start shouting, you know, with the joy. And then we could, the one who was nearest that man, she recognized that he's speaking Polish. And he said in Polish, "My God, how many women?" Because it was 1,700 of us in that place. So she shouted to us, "It's a Paul, you know." So we ran to him and, you know, I don't know. I think it is a miracle that we didn't kill him. And anyway, we start to, you know, give a question and so on. And he tried to answer, you know, shout to us that we are free from this moment. But he had to come back to the unit, you know, so he left us. And then after a while, you know, many more come, and then officially we know that we are free. Could you imagine that very man? We have it. I believe it was 40 years after, you know, the war finished, and we had a reunion in London, and he came to that reunion. Yes. He is still alive.
That must have been quite a moment for you.
Oh, yes, it was. Yes, it was. In Belgium, but we were not in the concentration part, you know.
This camp would be a part of it.
Yes, I see. So we could see through the wires, you know, people from the concentration camp. And the Russian as well, because the Russian were there as well, prisoner of war. But we were, you know, completely separate, wire around women, you know.
Did you get an idea what Belsen was like, though? Was your camp anything like that, would you say?
No. First of all, because of the Genevian Convention, German couldn't kill any prisoner of war. So that was the main, you know. They try to, you know, make miserable life different way, but they couldn't kill anybody. Only if one of us would try to escape then, you know, but we didn't try.
So after your liberation, were you taken back to Warsaw? What actually happened?
Oh, no. After our liberation, you know, the division soldiers, they have a paper, I don't know, weekly or monthly, sort of, you know. And they told us that if anybody have friends or any relation in the West, you know, during the wartime, if you could put your name that you are here, so we will print in the paper and send to England and, you know, everywhere else. else. So you might find somebody. So girls did that. And one girl just happened, she had a relation in RAF here in England. And soon he find out about it. He traveled to Oberlangen, to Germany, to visit her. And come back to England and talk with the RAF, you know, people, English and Polish. And he said that it would be a good idea, you know, if we will manage to bring even a small group from that camp to England. So, but it was sort of, you know, in Yalta, it was when Churchill, Roosevelt and Stalin talk, you know, and when they give the part of Poland to Russia, yeah. It was agreement between Stalin and two of them that they won't take anybody from prisoner of war camp to England and or into the army or you know, that was, you know, agreement. So when he came here and talked about it, he'd been told what's happened, that not officially. So they did, you know, tricky way. And they organized it. It was even, you know, end of the world, but war, not world. And they decided that they will try to do extra course, you know, for WAFs in Wimslow near Manchester. And so they, if anybody from RAF have got friends or relations in Oberlangen, they were asking to put the name on, and those girls they will be bring to England. I didn't have myself, but that girl who was relation of that man who visited her in Oberlangen, she was my friend. And so obviously she put my name and my friends, close friends, you know, we were all the time together. Four of us, we've been very close together. So she put our names on the list. And one afternoon, the commanding officer in our Stalag, she came to me and she said, "You are going to England, but you can't say a word to anybody. You will be leaving camp for a party. Why party? Because, you know, after a liberation, all units, no matter what nationality, English, American, Canadian, Polish, they were used to come to our Stalag by lorry and take a group of girls for a party. They organize a party, dance and, you know, tear, that sort of thing. Every night, so in terms we, every night somebody, some group was going out. So the commanding officer told us, "You are going for a party. That's what everybody will know." And that's how it happened. So we went, you know, to the party, left the Oberlangen to Holland. And in Holland, the RAF unit was stationed there. And they managed to organize with one very, you know, wealthy man who've got a villa in Enschede. And not very far from the German border. So we didn't have travel, you know, very, very far. And he emptied that villa, and the men from RAF, they bring beds inside, and they were supply us with the food every day. So 84 of us, they managed to smuggle to Holland. And then we have to wait about 2 weeks, and then the medical people and some other, I suppose, from Home Office, they come to Holland, talk to us, and they told us that we have to fill some sort of form, but we can't say true. We have to, every one of us have to write a story, that we, whatever you want, but not the truth, not that you were prisoner of war in the Stalag. You are a civilian, and for one or the other reason you were in the Germany, and you are going to England. So I put on my form that I was working on the farm, you know. And everyone put different story. And then, you know, all those papers they bring to England, and we wait another week for planes. And then three planes, Dakota, flew to Holland and take us from Holland. And when we came to Croydon, actually, we landed in Croydon, and the officer told us, now they gave us the white card, like we have now normally when you landed here, you have to fill. So then he said, now you could ride the through, which we did. And straight from Croydon, they took us to Wimslow recruiting camps for a WAFS, and we joined WAFS. Even it was the end of the war, but they organized specially one extra course to for us, so that way they managed to bring us over here. And I was in the WAF. And then after the course, 2 months course, recruiting course, I've been sent to RAF station, Dunholm Lodge near Lincoln, where I meet my husband, because he was a pilot.
So, a British pilot,
yeah,
you see.
Yeah. And
so that, what an experience to suddenly, from a POW,
yeah,
to become an English WAF, as it were.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Were you given proper training as a WAF? You know,
oh, yes,
full
yes,
training?
Yes, but apart from, because many of us, I did want to go on meteorological course, which during the wartime some WAFs they did have. The other one as a mechanic and so on. But unfortunately, because it was over the war, we couldn't go on different courses. So all of us, we work in the offices, different offices. I used to work in the office, you know, in the station, RAF station.
Did you have any English?
We did have English lessons, but being young and stupid, you know, I did go for a date instead of for English lesson.
And were you mainly with Polish airmen? Would it have been a Polish base?
Yes.
Or airmen?
Yeah, Polish, yes. All the time I spoke, you know, Polish language.
Yes.
Yeah, all the
Is
time.
That where you were stationed, Wilmslow?
No, no. That was a recruiting course. And from Wilmslow I was sent to Dunholm Lodge.
Dunholm. D-A-N...
D... No, actually, it is D-U.
D-U-N-H-O-L-M-E. Oh, that's where you met your husband?
Yes.
I see.
Yeah.
Mm. What had happened to your mother? Did you have any news of home at this time? Because the war would have been over, would it?
Well, for a long time I couldn't find her. I tried different addresses in Poland, you know, and from the when I was still before the liberation, German gave us a form once a month, special form, you know, and we could write on that form letter. And I did try, obviously I know that I couldn't send a letter on my address because it was demolished. So I try, you know, as many as I remember, every time I try to send a letter to different address, you know, people I know or some relation. And I in the end I managed to get reply from my mom, where I was still in the Stalag before liberation. So I know that she's alive. And my sister-in-law and the little girl, I know that they are alive. But it was very funny because my mom, when she wrote a letter to me, she wrote about, you know, our relation and about one person. She put it in the letter that he is dead, you know, with his wife. And the first one day they gave us letters, and the next day parcels, you know. So I've got a letter, say, like today, and tomorrow I've got a parcel. I look for the name of sender, and it was that man who my mom thought that he is dead. So, you know, I just shout, oh, I've got a parcel from that man. Yeah. So that was the only letter. And then when I came to England, I still didn't, you know, have any news, because my mom changed the address. She lived with somebody else at that time. So for a long time, I didn't know. And she didn't know about me. But finally, through somebody, I managed to send a letter, you know, and she got it. So since then, we correspond. Yeah.
It was quite a big thing for you to leave Poland, to come to England.
Oh, yes.
Was there any particular reason you didn't want to stay in Poland?
Yes, it wasn't safe for me. I've been told, all of us really, from the underground army, because we were very much against communism. So, you know, it wasn't very safe for us to come back. But on the other hand, if I wouldn't marry it, probably I would come back. Probably I would, yeah, risk and come back if I wouldn't marry it. But when I married, my husband said, no, it isn't safe. We're not going back. And so that was that.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel at the time, you know, when the Russians didn't help the uprising, that perhaps Poland would become communist after the war?
Oh, yes, we realized that.
Did you expect that?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, we expect that, because we knew that they tried to have their own communist regime, their own people. So we knew about that, yeah.
And how easy was it to settle in England?
Rather difficult. Not knowing language. Luckily, my husband knew, but I didn't. So it was quite difficult. And not knowing anybody, don't have any family, you know. So it was quite, don't have money, how to start really, you know. Especially not knowing language, how you could start to work. So it was quite difficult, really. We worked very, very hard, very hard.
And did you have a family?
Yes, I've got 3 children. 2 girls and a boy, yes.
When did you first go back to Poland?
In 1962, I think, I went for a holiday.
How easy was that to go back? That would
completely different than I expected. I thought that I will be, you know, straight away at home. It will be very easy for me to adopt, you know. But it wasn't so. Everything was so different to the time I remember, you know, completely different. So it was quite strange.
And Warsaw, going back to Warsaw.
Oh, completely different. Different, completely different it was, yes. Mm-hmm. Not my Warsaw, what I remember, no.
How about the square, that lovely old square which had been rebuilt?
Oh, yes, with that I was quite pleased that they managed to rebuild, you know, like it was.
Was it like it was?
Yes, it was, yeah. But the street I used to live, a strange feeling I had walking, you know, through that street. Ever so quiet, that part, which before war, you know, people were outside and it was life, you know, full of life, that part of Warsaw. But now it is very, very quiet. Yes, very quiet. But my first step, you know, I went to Warsaw by train first time. And it was delayed a few hours, so it was, so I don't know, in the middle of the night I managed to get to Warsaw. And then we talk, you know, with the family, because it was, well, I don't know how many people, lot, been waiting for me on the station.